Tell us on the air.
They're wrapping up a little bit early upstairs, so we're going to get a countdown as soon as they start coming this way.
All right. Well, we will stand apprised of that. Bill Simmons, the sports guy, will join us sometime here real soon. I don't know. We projected around 1:30, but maybe it's a little earlier, maybe it's a little later. We just don't know. We just have to be ready for anything, which is just fine with us. All right, here comes Bill.
10 years ago.
Right there. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I guess we'll just slide right into that.
Why not?
When do we got a break by, Groobs, to double up?
Like 50. 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
All right. Very good.
What you want to do?
I look forward to it.
Look how happy TC is. Should we take floating? Take another picture
I feel like this needs to happen very early.
Heart's
on
popping out of his head.
All right,
how you doing? Very nice,
nice to meet you.
Hey man, how you doing? We're on the air. You want to just throw on
Bill?
The headset,
how's it going? So? Here, we'll just talk to you right now. We won't make you sit through those obtrusive commercials.
Nice headphones.
Here he is.
A fancy operation.
Oh, we're
the great Bill Simmons.
We're pretty big time.
Look how excited TC. Take a picture of him next to TC because.
Hey, Bill.
This is our intern, TC.
How are you, TC?
Get in the picture there, TC.
This is good radio.
This is like the greatest day of his life.
That might be in his bedroom poster size in about 40 minutes.
It's a bucket list moment for him.
And did you ever think, certainly when you got into writing, first of all, you probably did it for girls. But this is your following. This is your base. This is your...
Does anybody get into writing for girls?
Yeah, I think most people... Yeah, most people are like, you know, I want to be a sports writer so I can get girls.
Yeah, I don't...
I thought it was to go to games for free.
I remember thinking that I
was
never
being funny.
Get girls.
Okay. I thought I was being comedic.
Oh, that's good. I see where you went
with
that.
But this is... I just think the general, I mean, add it all together. Add the common listener of the podcast, the common fan of your column, the buyer of your book. There you go.
There he is.
That's Chuck right there.
That's just when you put it all together.
No, you know what? We're all big fans of you. I don't know about him. Donovan may not be.
I am.
He's got a
pretend.
No, I won't pretend.
He's got a weird thing with you.
All right.
But
have a major beef with you.
All
I'll
right,
tell you later. Yeah.
All right.
But we're obviously the way this industry is. It's and I kind of like your when you start riffing with your guys on the BS Report or whatever, and just kind of going wherever about where we're all headed as an industry.
Yeah.
Because when we're in college, and I feel like you were in college about the same time, I was in college 90 to 94, sports radio was just starting. And it was really good timing on our part because all these jobs needed to be filled by people.
Yeah.
And whereas if you got into it like in the year 2000, there weren't that many jobs available because other people had grabbed onto them. And
when you say sports radio, you mean like all-day sports networks.
Yeah, not syndicating, one network in 300 markets, but actually having 30 guys who could make their living in Dallas doing this. That didn't exist in the 80s.
Or sports / pop culture, guy talk, radio, whatever we are.
Yeah, that went late. That happened a little bit later. I remember listening to, I think it was 87 or 88. I actually heard WFAN go on the air.
That was such a big moment when they were at Sports Illustrated. I remember, wow, what is this?
Might have been Jim Lampley.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember who the host was, and I remember thinking, like, all sports radio. Like, this is a good idea.
Right.
Because... You know, in the mid-80s, like, there was so little, like, I'm a big NBA draft guy, and there was so little NBA draft information, and you wanted to hear it. Anytime anybody talked about it, it was exciting. So the thought of that somebody would be able to talk about the NBA draft for 3 straight days in the radio was pretty cool. And it seemed like, as you said, early 90s it exploded, and then probably this decade was more of people actually talking like people talk.
Yeah.
I think the 90s were a lot of like, we have this college coach on, and he's on for 20 minutes, and it's going to be really boring.
Right.
We're going to ask him. And I think people eventually realized that people just want to hear a conversation.
I remember hearing Mike and the Mad Dog talk about a Clippers-Knicks game for like 45 minutes, and at the time I was riveted. But now I ponder the idea of talking about like a Clippers-Knicks box score like they did. I mean, they just basically went over a box score for 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And I love them. Don't get me wrong, but it's just, it's mind-numbing to think that that happened.
Well, and those are guys that I used to listen to a lot in the 90s. And a couple, when they would veer off, that's when I was like the most, like the Oscars would be coming up and they'd be doing their Oscar picks. I'm like, I love this. I like hearing this much more than hearing them talk about the Knicks. Or they'd do, on Fridays, they would guess the lines, which is something I stole from my podcast. Because I was like, when they guess the... They not guess the lines, guess the TV ratings on Monday. That's
okay.
On Monday, they would be like, hey, Mike, what do you think the Masters got? And Mike would be like, 7-2. No, hi, Mike. 7-8. And it was just, I was always riveted over the car. Like, this is awesome. So,
and why? You know, like,
I don't know why.
I don't even,
I can't
like,
tell if I like your Mad Dog or your mic more. I feel like.
My mic is much,
your mic's
much
pretty
better.
Solid, yeah.
Much better.
I don't even, I'm not into gambling. When I first heard your premise of, well, you guessed the lines with Cousin Sal, I thought, this will be one that I don't listen to. But I love that. I play along.
It's funny because
I don't know anything about gambling. I love it.
I have old columns when I would write about sports radio because Sal and I would do that for years, and just on our own time on the phone. And I would always be like, would always be a radio show, but I never knew that the podcast medium was coming. And as soon, it was like 07, I heard this podcast Chad Ford did with Danny Ainge. It was on our website. And he talked to him for 20 minutes, and it was like right before the lottery. And I was like, I want one. It was like, you know, I was like a little kid. Like, I want one of those, what Chad has.
Yeah.
And I just thought it would be a good way to talk, you know, to have real conversations with people. Because especially like on ESPN, part of the problem we had was we'd have these 8-minute segments and then break. 9 minutes break. 3 minutes break. Come back with your flash break. And it was like, it always felt choppy to me. And the radio shows that succeed, I think, are the ones that can go 20 minutes with somebody.
Thank you.
And in fact, hold that thought. We're going to take a break.
Oh, I can't.
We had that exact
kidding.
Conversation yesterday.
Totally kidding.
It's ironic to talk to Bill Simmons, who jokes that it takes 3,500 words to get loose, you know,
yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm just getting loose now.
But the SMU interview window, they, you know, in just a second, they'll try to run you to the next place. So I'm just saying. No, we love you guys. We love you guys. But you have to figure the 8 to 10 minute window very well. No, it's nothing but irony. So here's what I wanted to ask you about, though, Bill, with regards to, because I do think the way you write a column, the way you do the podcast and so forth, I do think of guys our age, you've done a nice job of kind of figuring out what might be around the next corner, even the 30 for 30 stuff.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that you are trying to figure out what's next. But then it comes back to me as 40-year-olds almost or just past or whatever. Do we have any idea what's next, or is that some 20-year-old in a college right now that's going to figure that out? Like, do you almost think, even at your age right now, that it's kind of tough? You figured it out kind of one time that this, and this were about to happen in this 10-year window, but how can you kind of keep doing that? It's kind of hard, right? Because we didn't know sports radio when we went to college.
Well, I do a ton of HGH to try to
stay that's
on.
Good.
Yeah, I don't know
that's
if
good.
You guys knew that. But
ideas are a tough thing, though.
I'm really mentally 30 because of all the stuff I'm taking. You know, I'm hoping they're spinning me off on this website that's going to launch this summer. And it's going to be sports and pop culture and really good writers. And, you know, I think what's happened with the Internet to some degree is it's been a lot of quantity over quality. And some of even the best sports blogs are trying to get stuff up constantly. And it's shorter stuff and it's stuff that they're putting up as fast as they can. And
it's kind of garbage, let's be honest.
Well,
right?
some of the stuff's good.
But it's 100 words about
this
guy can practice, and it's nothing, right?
Well, but it's stuff that if they had taken more time with, really, they could have really turned something into.
There you go.
And for me, it's like I do feel like there's a place for good writing, good long-form writing, good columns, well-thought-out stuff. And I also think it's the onus of the website that if you come to my website, you know that everything we have is good and not stuff that we just threw up. So I think, you know, I think we have a real chance. It's not going to be on ESPN. It's not going to have an ESPN URL. We're going to have a little more leeway. It's going to be sports and pop culture. We already have some really good pop culture people in the mix. And so maybe that'll be the next thing. Or I go down in flames, one or the other.
But we celebrated the USA Today at all of our college campuses. But on some level, somewhere along the way, even the way network football works, we're attempting, I think, to dumb it down to the bigger audience, because I think sometimes the real shrewd broadcasters don't get great games because they're a little too inside football. I know you are big into, you know, the stat stuff as well, although you obviously don't pound it in your columns. You're aware of it and you're interested, obviously.
Yeah.
The convention you were just at, what do we call that?
Dorkapalooza.
Yeah, Dorkapalooza.
Yeah.
I mean, you're into it, you just don't write about it all the time.
Well, because I think the one sport that it really matters is baseball. Baseball is a sport that you can tell exactly how good somebody is statistically. And in basketball, you can't. Because too much depends on how you're being used and how you perform with your other teammates. And somebody like Tyson Chandler has had a huge effect on the Mavericks. Statistically, you can come up with defensive stats and you can come up with some individual stats, but you still have to watch the games to see it. And Jason Kidd is a great three-point shooter. And statistically, it seems, you know, some of the stuff that he does doesn't show up because he's so good at running the team, knowing exactly where to get Dirk the ball, like exactly. And guys love playing with him. But on the flip side, he can't guard anyone anymore. He can't create his own shot anymore. And statistically, that stuff doesn't totally show up either because he's a great spot-up three shooter. Doesn't necessarily mean he's a good three-point shooter. It just means he's open a lot. He takes a lot of open threes. So, you know, I don't think it's something they'll ever totally figure out with basketball. I think they can bang out certain things like usage rate. Do you know usage rate?
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's a stat I wish I had considered with the three Miami Heat guys, because you looked at their usage rate. Usage rate basically says how involved were they in every possession. All of them were over 30%, which means like one out of every three possessions they were directly involved with their team. Well, law of averages means all three guys can't be directly involved in one, so somebody's going to suffer, and Bosch ended up being the casualty.
Yeah.
I wish I had predicted that. I didn't know enough about it at that point.
The great Bill Simmons is with us here on the ticket. So I want to know how you got to be the great Bill Simmons. Like, so you go to college and...
I still think I'm the just above mediocre Bill Simmons.
Okay. When'd you graduate?
Graduated in 92. I had a sports column all 4 years.
Like a column in your college paper?
Yeah, and it was popular, and I was assumed, I'm going to graduate, I'm going to get a column.
So your dream was?
I wanted a sports column in the Boston Globe.
Okay.
And I went to my master's in Boston University, got that in a year. All right, I'll do some grunt work for a newspaper, and they'll give me a column. And I covered high school sports for 3 years and did features and stuff. And I looked around, and it's a newspaper. Nobody's going to leave. It's not like sports where they're like, all right, it's Boubois's time to start. Jason Kidd, you got to go. Jason Kidd is on the Mavs till he's 58 if it's a newspaper.
Sure.
And I was just like, I'm never going to get a chance. So I quit, and I started working in a restaurant. I was bartending.
So this is mid-90s?
96.
I quit. This is your reference in your book was I quit the Boston Globe and smoked pot for
Boston
a year.
Boston Herald, yeah. Well, I smoked pot for many years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Don't narrow that down
but
to 1 year.
A little extra that year, yeah. Perhaps.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest year. I worked at a bar and just didn't write, really. And just, you know, at some point my dad was like, hey, you're going to write again, right? And I'm like, I don't know. It's not going to happen. And then the internet kind of came around. And I started my own website and just threw myself into it, tried to work in the restaurant.
What was the website?
It was called bostonsportsguy.com. And it's basically a lot of the stuff that I'm doing now. I wasn't as, you know, it took me like probably 2 years to get to the level. I don't know, 18 months before I felt like, all right, I know what I'm doing now. And then another 2 years before I got to ESPN. That was a really long 2 years.
During that, though, you weren't doing that. You just started that on your own, the side. I always think that's a key with dudes who become successful in some way. You just do what you like.
Yeah,
it wasn't because you thought, I could make $1 million someday if I do this.
No.
Or maybe you did. And like even you, I wonder about the credit you were just given that, hey, you saw this coming. Did you see this coming, or did you say, I'm just going to do something I like? I'm a sports nerd.
I saw the internet thing coming.
Okay.
I really felt like...
You thought if I get in early?
It wasn't even to get in early. It was like... cool, I have a place to write. Now people...
I don't need...
Because for 5 years...
Like validation from a boss and a paycheck.
Well,
I'm just on
the paycheck
here writing.
Thing was like, I just felt like it was going to work out. Because I felt like I know how to write a column. I can write a column differently than all the columns I'm reading now. Because at the time it was like newspaper, going to the clubhouse, get quotes, write a column. Nobody had any imagination. And nobody was writing about the stuff that my friends and I were talking about. Like, I remember, like, the sixth thing. This is summer 97. Like, the sixth thing I ever did was a mailbag. And one of the big questions was about Anna Kournikova. And she was at Wimbledon that year. And it was a question of, am I a pervert because she's 15 but she's hot? So I broke the whole thing down. And this was stuff that nobody was talking about in 1997. So instantly, I think people felt a kinship with that. And I think the seventh thing I did was I did the worst 33 sports movies of all time. And I just get, you know, Gymkhana. Yeah. And now it's an idea you see a lot. But back then it was like, where were you going to read that? You weren't going to read that anywhere.
Well, yeah, because newspapers. Even if they do let you write, they got 800 words for you. They cannot freeform.
When I was at the Herald, I listened to sports radio. WEI had started full time, like, I think 3-4 years before. And I listened to sports radio all day for, I think, 20 straight hours. And I did a long-running diary, and they were going to give me 2 pages in it. And it was like, this is going to be my big chance. I had great jokes. It was basically a lot of like what I'm doing now. And the day before, the guy goes, hey, we had to chop it to 40 lines, which 40 lines, if you know anything about newspapers, that's like nothing.
Right.
He's like, but it's better. And I'm like, it's better? I spent 20 hours. Like, it was really good, but I hated it. He's like, no, these are all just the best jokes. And it was terrible. And it's just that newspapers just couldn't accommodate that kind of stuff because of the space. And
right.
I knew that was the biggest advantage I had with the internet was the extra space. And then when I really realized it was going to work was the Red Sox traded for Pedro Martinez in like November 97. And it happened in the morning. It happened at like 10 o'clock. And I wrote a column right away. It went up at like 3. It was a pretty good column. And we had like a feedback vote on the trade. By 5 o'clock, we had, you know, it was running on AOL's main page. And you know, by the time the newspaper came out the next day with their stories, it felt like a dead story because anybody who was online, it'd be like, I already did this. And that's when I knew. I was like, the internet's going to work.
Yeah, I feel like that's when I became aware of you, is right around when AOL, what was that, Digital City?
Digital City Boston.
Okay,
yeah.
That's when I
feel
like.
It was a local guide, yeah.
When I
so how did ESPN get, do you apply or did somebody call you and say, hey, we love your stuff?
ESPN launched Page 2 in 2000. And I didn't apply for it. They just launched it. And I was like, I couldn't believe they didn't consider me because they was like a sports and it's like, yeah, I was like.
And you were kind of blown up on the internet?
I wasn't blown up. I probably had, this was still, you know, this is 2000. And this is a time when people still didn't know how to forward URLs. They people like my dad weren't on email yet. You tell people like, yeah, I write this column. Oh, who do you write for? It's on the internet. It's on Digital City Boston. And people would just be like, what? It's on the internet? Like, do you get paid? Like, they'd always kind of regard you warily. So then, you know, I think it took like another 9 months. Page 2 asked me to write a column about Nomar, who had just gotten hurt. And this was, I think, April 2nd, 2001. And the reason they asked me was they had done the ESPYs in February, and I crushed it. Like, I did a running diary of it. I just made fun of everybody, and it was a really funny column. And it got passed around the ESPN offices, and the right person saw it and was like, we should get this guy to write something for us. Like, maybe we get him on our side. And it just, they gave me 3 chances, and I did well with the 3 chances, so they hired me. That was it.
You know, an anecdote, and if you're a basketball fan, you should read Bill's basketball book, Book of Basketball, in fact.
Yeah.
And my personal anecdote is I do love the footnotes.
Thank you.
And the footnote I enjoyed the most because I am...
I have the footnotes to the footnotes.
I'm an
if you have the paperback.
I'm an exceptional sports dork in that when you did mention that you can be seen in the video in game 4 of the 87 finals, I had to go to my videotape collection and find little 15-year-old Bill Simmons or whatever at the Garden.
Crestfallen.
Well, you had really good seats.
Yeah.
I feel like... Your dad really invested in Celtics tickets.
No, it wasn't expensive back then.
Wow.
I think it was when he got the ticket, he got one ticket in 1974, it was $4. And then they won in 76, but then they became bad. And Cowan's briefly retired. Team fell apart, and they just kind of moved us toward the middle. And they gave us a choice. They were like, you can have these 2 seats together in row 10, or you could have these 2 seats right on the tunnel where the players walk in and out, but they're 2 rows apart. So we were like, we want to be in the tunnel.
So you can high-five Larry every time.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I'll come talk to you during timeouts. And so that whole Larry Bird era, they were walking in and out of the tunnel, and I saw everybody. I saw Jordan, Manute Bol, Muggsy Bogues, like you name it. They all walked through that tunnel. And,
that's awesome.
It was great.
So you were there for 63, huh? When Jordan scored 63 in the Garden?
I was not at that one.
Okay.
I hit probably...
Fake Boston fan.
Well, no, I'm just saying, I'm saying that particular game, even though Boston won and Jordan was hurt in the whole bit, that was one of the most influential games of my life. And the three between the legs against Larry is still...
I think I went to game one and not game two somehow.
Okay.
For some reason, I remember watching the 63-pointer on TV. But, you know, to me, the best ones... were the ones nobody even remembers. Like in 81, which is 30th anniversary, that was when we played Philly. And that's when basketball, that's when the refs let the guys go in the last 5 minutes. Like they would never do that now. Like now it'd be like flagrant. So double technical. And it, you know, and there was an intensity to that game that I was only 11. And I've still, to this day, I've never seen anything like that.
Okay, back to you. Back to Bill Simmons.
Yeah.
And your career.
Uh-oh.
How'd you ever hook up with Kimmel and stuff? How did you get writing on his show?
I was writing for ESPN.com, and I did a running diary of a roast that he did. He did the first, it was either Shaq, and it was the first Shaq roast. And
the one with Emmett? Or the one?
No.
No, Emmett was the second one.
Kimmel wasn't on the Emmett one.
The Emmett one was influential.
And, yeah, the Emmett one.
Have you seen
incredible.
The Moose Johnston meltdown?
Oh, of everything. I know the whole story, too, because I know, like, multiple people that were there. So I'm fascinated by
that's
it.
That's one of the best
it's the greatest.
Roast in history.
It's the There's so many subplots to it. The Shaq one was the first one they did. Queen Latifah, I think, was the host, and she was 3 hours late, which I didn't know at the time. So everybody's sitting there for 3 hours waiting for Queen Latifah. And Jimmy was there, and it was like a very low-budget production. And Jimmy was the only white guy on the dais, and you know it's just like every the certain brand of comedy. He came up and he just started throwing darts at everybody, and Shaq was like sprawled over the table, so I wrote something about how much I enjoyed it, and he just emailed me out of the blue, and he's like, I've been reading you for a while, I'm a big fan, and we just started emailing, and at the time. ABC quietly was talking about a show, and he's like, you know, they're talking about this thing. If I get this, I'm going to hire you. And at that point, I was pretty burned out because I had been full tilt for 5 years. And, you know, this is a case where I didn't see the potential of the internet because I was like, I want to use this to get something else. And I thought, like, oh, I'm going to be involved in this later. This is great. This is a great next step. And ABC, or ESPN graciously let me do it. And I tried to do both for 18 months, and it was just impossible.
Uh-huh.
It was working on late night shows 12 hours a day, trying to keep a column. It wasn't the writing the column as much as I couldn't follow sports. And there were a couple times where I'm writing an NBA column, and I'm like, I'm talking out of my ass. Like, uh-huh. I haven't seen a game in 3 weeks, and I'm pretending like I have an opinion on the Spurs.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, all right, I got to choose. And I just love the column.
Awesome.
And well, I just wanted to tell them which podcast I enjoy the most, if you don't care.
I always care.
Of course, everybody loves Klosterman. I would guess that's probably one of your heaviest downloaded ones.
Because he's a provocateur.
He's unbelievable.
He tries to turn the tables on me.
I wonder how many people you've turned on to him, though, because I would have to confess that would be me, and now I've read pretty much all his stuff.
Yeah, but you forget, though. Chuck was in a very, very crucial OC episode in season two.
Wow.
Was he really?
Seth Cohen was reading his book, and that did a thousand times more for him than any podcast. That show was red hot at the time.
So you met Carolla through Kimmel then, right?
Yeah, Carolla and Jimmy actually
were they doing the Man
first
Show?
Day with LA. No, they had just finished it.
When he had emailed you, though, they had just finished it. Okay.
And Carolla was one of the original writers on the show, and we would just sit in the writer's office and talk about bad movies for hours. And those were like
that's
all
among
the
your best
podcasts.
Stuff.
Yeah.
In fact, we were just
that's
talking about what show do I like because it's so bad. I said it.
Lights Out on FX.
Oh, The Wife is terrible.
Are you into Lights Out?
Despite The Wife.
But it's one of the best
bad
shows.
Unintentional comedy.
Really
bad. Yeah.
Like the
She's
fight scenes.
So bad.
The lead guy's good.
The lead guy is
Holt,
good. Holt's good.
Whatever. He's okay. But the point is, just it's so ridiculous. The fight scenes are ridiculous.
Listen, Carol and I, we did a podcast. We went to see Drive Angry.
Yeah, I heard that.
We were excited. And we were like, we're going to do a podcast. We're going to go see this and go. And we went, and we were the only two people in the theater, which was awesome because we basically got to talk the whole time.
Sure.
And to us, that's like, I'd rather see Drive Angry than King's Speech.
Yeah.
I just think it's more entertaining.
And
I can see King's Speech at home.
I'd rather hear you guys talk about that than hear King's Speech for an hour.
Yeah.
Ebert talk about
Absolutely.
That. But I really enjoy, and you guys haven't really done it too much, and you never do it on your podcast, but you will do it when you are on his podcast, because it can get a little...
I've gotten in trouble on his podcast.
Have you?
Yeah.
Really? Is that why we don't hear any more porn talk between you guys?
There was one that...
You've given some great advice in the past on...
it went out of control.
On the audio on the porn and the...
Well, Carolla... Yeah. Carolla is one of those guys
You need
that,
an adult room on your website.
No, I don't think we do. I really don't
Not
think we do.
For videos and such. I just mean for adult conversations that the kids can't
tune
into.
Carolla wrote me into his Sunday afternoon podcast that we do with football, and Christy Canyon was the second guest. And I thought that I was going to go on first, and then she was going to come on. And she just sat down with us when we were doing it, and I'm freaking out. Because I know Carolla, and it's like there's only 8 or 9 minutes before the porn questions are going to start coming.
I got to get out of here.
They're not typical porn questions either. They're like very, very... And so I'm just, it's the most scared I've ever been on a podcast because I'm like, I'm literally just going to throw the headset off and walk out.
So this was after you had already gotten in trouble?
Yeah.
Or so, gotten your hand smacked?
Yeah.
Or?
Oh, I got my hand almost chopped off.
Really?
And so Carolla, and I'm just waiting there because I know him well enough that if he gets the gleam in his eye, and so at some point they're talking and 8 minutes goes by, we're fine, and we're talking about her career, how does she date guys, and then... She starts saying about, she says something about, I don't remember, but maybe it was something about like as a buxom lady or something. And I just saw the light flickering over Carolla. And I'm like, oh, all right, Adam, it was great meeting you, Christy. Gotta go. And I got out of there. And I saved my career by about a minute, I think.
Nice work.
I think I heard that one. They asked you one real mundane football question so you could tell everybody that you were there for sports.
That it was an alleged football show. And it wasn't. Yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you. For a nice chunk of time here. This is, I think I guilted the SMU people, who are
my
awesome,
pleasure.
By the way. Well done.
No, I love Dallas. I've been here 4 times in 13 months.
Oh, yeah,
and
you have.
This is the first time I've gotten good weather.
No doubt. You did bring the snow a few times.
Here. The snow was like, people were just so blown away by the snow when we were here. And people who lived here, they were like, it's not always like this. And
yeah.
It was hard to believe the second time. It was like, all right, I believed you the first time. This is 2 times in a row now.
Totally.
All right, would you read our wacky radio liner?
Yes.
This will prove in the future that you were on the show and stuff.
This is Bill Simmons, and I never listened to the Bob and Dan show on Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket.
Keep it going.
All right. Thank you, fellas.
Great stuff.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Sim.
Thanks.
Thank
you,
Dallas.
Fans. Thank you.
Huge fans. All right.
Thanks, nice meeting you.
All right.
Bill Simmons.